Welcome to a very special episode of Hacks and Jacks. My name is Brett Ford. I'm joined, as always, by Scott Chu. And we're here in October talking about fantasy baseball. It's early. It's crockpot season. I've got chili cooking in the kitchen. The World Series is on. It's a great time to be alive. Scott, we're talking fantasy baseball. There's no better time to do it than October.
Oh, man. This is the time where you get to see a lot of baseball's best. I mean, Shohei Ohtani. If you didn't think he was the best player on the planet that ever lived already, you should now, right? Between the pitching performances, like I thought Freddie Freeman said it best. He said, our starting pitcher for tomorrow got on base 9 times today, right? Like that's unbelievable. And the Blue Jays are so much fun to watch. And, you know, we're going to be talking about my ranks. My blurb on Vlad Guerrero Jr. looks really stupid if you've been watching the World Series, but I can defend it still to an extent. But it's really fun to see these guys just, you know, on the biggest stage. You love seeing Vladdy be there. If you don't always get chances to watch Ohtani, you get to watch Ohtani now, see why everybody thinks he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and Ohtani is one of the first guys that we grabbed in our podcast, PL Podcast Mock Draft. All of the pitcherless podcasts each took a team in this wonderful mock draft that Nick put together for us. We got the 2 spot. This is one of the things we're going to talk about, but we're going to use this more as a tool, not just to go over the draft pick by pick, but as a tool to talk about Scott's top 200 hitter list rankings for 2026, which was published, on Monday, Tuesday, earlier this week.
Monday.
So yeah, it's extremely helpful, especially as we prepare, for drafts early in the season. I'm sure if there's anybody out there like me who's been getting the itch a little bit after about a month removed from fantasy baseball season, I'm sure that those of you like me have been checking NFBC and seeing what's on the market and seeing what's available and kind of just trolling around there, seeing what's out there. But no better time to take a look at a mock draft than right now, for sure. So let's jump right into it. We had the second spot, and that was a spot that we chose. And you know, looking at your rankings and your tiers, it was pretty obvious that we should probably take one of the top 2 spots because of how Judge and Ohtani separated themselves in the 2025 rankings and how they continue to be just their own tier in 2026.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're going to talk about the first few rounds are extremely deep with talent, right? I think a lot of people in the second or third rounds of their draft are going to be like, I can't believe I got player X here. I think there's going to be a lot of people feeling that. It's going to be true for the first like 5 or 6 rounds. You're going to be like, I can't believe a player of this caliber was still here, because there's a bunch of players of that caliber. There's a lot of very, very good baseball players right now. The top talent in MLB is very, very deep. But talking about Judge and Ohtani, I think there's just such another level to their game, right? Like these other guys, you're like, hey, if everything goes perfect, he can touch 50 home runs. And with Judge and Ohtani, we're like, yeah, it's 50, right? It's, you know, it's 50 home runs, like baseline, right? That's unbelievable, right? Like there's a reason that if you wanted to bet on the 2026 MVP in both leagues, those are the two names, and everyone else gets little bits of like, oh, maybe. What about, you know, hey, maybe. No, it's Judge and Ohtani. They're the top 2. If you pick first or second, you can set your auto pick the moment you find out, right? It's either Judge or Ohtani. We picked second. Eno took Judge first. I ranked Judge first. All throughout the season last year, I had Ohtani as number 1. I switched it to Judge. I think he's proven that a lot of those injury issues are behind him. Judge is going to have like 3 weeks or so in the season where the New York media is going to go crazy thinking something's wrong with him. This happens every season. I swear to God, it's like clockwork. They're going to think something's wrong with him and that, oh, maybe this is it. He's breaking down, blah, blah, blah. And then he's going to go and have like the best month of baseball that anybody has all season. Right. Like that's just, it happened in 2023, 2024, 2025. It happens every year because look, he's a big dude. He swings a lot. And if one little thing gets off, it's, you know, it's not a compact swing, right? I mean, he's 6'7". He swings the bat very hard. And so if something gets a little off, there's holes in it. Strikeout rates have always been high. Zone contact rate. He's one of these guys. He's one of the very few players that can survive with a zone contact rate that's often under 80%. And that's because every time he does touch the baseball, he sends it about a million miles an hour, about a million feet from the plate. So I do take Judge first. I think I take Ohtani second. I think, I don't think Ohtani's stealing 50 bases again, right? I think 20 is about where it is. Judge steals some bases too. And like Judge's ratios will be better than Ohtani's throughout the season because he just takes more walks. you can mix it all together. If you took Ohtani first, especially in like a daily league where he's just one player, it's specifically daily points leagues. Daily points leagues, Ohtani has to be number one where he's one player because as a starter, he will almost always outperform himself as a hitter on that one day. And then in categories leagues, you kind of get to pick your poison, right? Do I need the hitting stats more? Do I need the pitching stats more? Because he's only going to pitch about once a week. And then in weekly leagues, Ohtani is just a hitter, right? Like you're just going to start him as a hitter. That's where you're going to get the most value. So, you know, again, we can argue all you want about the top two, but there's not a third name in that discussion. Don't get cute. Those are the two names, one and two, Judge Ohtani.
Yeah. And you talk about daily points leagues. In my daily points league, it's an ESPN format. Ohtani had nearly double the points of the top hitter. I think he had somewhere between 850 and 900 points for the season, where the top hitter was somewhere around 550. So, you know, I mean, we're talking a significant gap back when he was pitching in a full-time role. So just
that's
be aware
he's that a good pitcher and the second best hitter, right? Like that's two players in one. And again, in points leagues, most points leagues will give a lot more points for a start for a pitcher that's halfway decent than they will for a hitter unless that hitter just goes off, right? Like there's some argument about, you know, early in the playoffs, Ohtani hit three home runs and then threw like 6 point something innings with 10 strikeouts, right? At that point, you're like, actually they're both really good. Settings matter. But for the most part, the pitching will take over. So in daily points leagues, Ohtani's the number one by a million miles. Where he's one player, everything else, I think I take Judge.
Let's just quickly go over kind of the draft format, the format that we were drafting for just before we really dive into the strategy that you and I talked about and dove into for this mock. We were drafting as a head-to-head categories league, 5x5 with no corner infielders, no middle infielders, only three outfielders, and a relatively short bench. So I know one of the things, Scott, that we talked about was to wait on pitching. I think some of that was because of your expertise mostly in hitters and having the expansive knowledge that you have on, you know, hitters and hitter stats. I think that played to our advantage in this draft, certainly. But then just pitching is so volatile and to draft pitchers early, 5-6 months before they're even going to take the mound in spring training is super scary for me personally. And I'm happy to just accumulate hitters in the early rounds like we did here.
Yeah. Well, so number one, we picked second. And as much as I love Skubal, Skeens, and Crochet, there's no way I'm taking them second, right? If Crochet had gotten back to us in the second round, I may have lobbied to do that. But those three guys are worth drafting in the first two rounds. Skubal, Skeens, Crochet. If you want to hear more about why, you can go listen to Nick's podcast. Although Nick also waits on pitching. and the real reason for that all the way down is hitting is crazy deep at the top, right? It gets real shaky, real like I call it deep because the first five rounds, six rounds are players you feel awfully good about, right? Like Corey Seager's in the sixth round here. Alex Bregman, Vinny P, Jackson Merrill, Wyatt Langford, like these are all guys that went in the sixth round, right? Fifth or sixth round. So like, yeah, no, sorry. Sixth round is like Jeremy Pena, Josh Naylor, say a Suzuki, Brent Rooker, players you feel really good about. You want as many of those hitters as you can possibly get. And there's not very many pitchers early on who are going to shake me off from taking one of these top hitters, right? Like Vlad Guerrero Jr. may very well go in your second round. He went like late second round in this one. I think that'll change, but like you want those hitters. The top tier of hitters is amazing. The middle tiers of pitching are also very good, right? There's a lot of very good pitchers that are still going to be available later on in drafts. We're talking like, a lot of young guys like Chase Burns, Nolan McLean, like those guys are all available later. Blake Snell's available later. Joe Ryan's available later. As in later than the first five or six rounds. So go get hitting. Go get all the hitting you can. I'm generally speaking, unless you're at like the back of the first round where you're going to get two shots at Scooble Skeens Crochet. If you want to take one of those, that's fine. At least mock that way once to see what that's like. But otherwise, go get the hitters. There are so many good ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the way that we accumulated them in the first three rounds here. After taking Ohtani second overall, we came back at the 2-3 turn and grabbed Cal Raleigh as our catcher and then Pete Alonso as our first baseman with picks 23 overall and 26 overall, respectively. And those are both guys in tier four of your rankings. Alonso at 14th overall, the 14th ranked hitter, Cal Raleigh 15. A lot of power there, and we really juiced up our home runs, RBIs, runs scored, and I don't even mind our batting average with those three guys as our foundation.
Yeah, so two things. Number one, weekly leagues batting average, it's pretty random, right? Like, over the course of the season, you'll find it, but week to week, it's very random. And these guys, especially like power hitters like Alonso, Ohtani, Cal Raleigh a little bit less. He just hasn't shown this quite as much, but like when they're hot, their batting average is great, right? They have weeks where their batting average is amazing and weeks where it's really bad. So you take the good with the bad. We can balance that out later, but yeah, three legitimate 50 home run potential guys right off the top, because is there power available later in the draft? Sure. But it comes with a lot more warts. A lot more risk. I think power is one of the categories I really don't want to have to be chasing at the end because of how many negatives I have to take to get it. Right? Like we took Joe Adell way later, right? That's just like, that's extra power, right? Which is cool. And we took him probably too early, but with Joe Adell, you're also being like, yeah, my batting average is going to suck. I think that my runs scored aren't going to be very good. There's a lot of things I'm not going to get, but I will get home runs. It's just that maybe that's all I get, right? Alonso, Raleigh, Ohtani, our following pick, Riley Green, that's at least home runs and RBI. The runs scored are good for all of them. The batting average is not nearly as bad as you think, right? None of them are like 210 hitters. Right? They're like 240, 250 at worst. That's Alonso and Raleigh. The Green and Ohtani can be even better than that. So yeah, none of them run though. So that was the big thing early on. When we did our first picks, I'm looking at the board for these first four rounds. And I'm thinking like, you know, at pick number two, I have to take Ohtani. I get some steals there. The following pick is Cal Raleigh because I don't like, you know, I don't want to go after what Eno did, which is Jazz Chisholm. I go, nah, I don't want to do that. I want power. And it didn't have any speed. So I was like, all right, let's see what comes back. Right. Maybe a guy who can run a bit comes back. And they didn't, right. I didn't want CJ Abrams. And so we have our next two picks and we take Alonso and Green. And so by this point, I never go into a draft saying I'm going to punt steals. Right. But by this point, we're four picks in. We are awesome across the board, except for speed. And that's when in a category league, right, where it resets every single week, I'm no longer thinking like, yeah, hey, I'm going to prioritize steals. there are a couple rabbits later in the draft that I thought about to be like, well, this guy keeps it, you know, keeps me in the running for that. But again, the like all the negatives that come with them are generally not worth it to me. So I was like, screw it. What if I just keep picking guys that don't run, right? Instead of taking dropping down a tier to get a guy who runs, I'm just going to keep picking best hitter available, knowing that stolen bases isn't something I'm going to win every week. And I don't care. I got 10 categories, right? Stolen bases is one, and stolen bases has the least correlation to any other stat on the hitting side, right? It doesn't really correlate that well to runs. It doesn't correlate well to batting average. It doesn't correlate to like anything. It correlates to what manager you have and how aggressive they are. That's about it. And they're fluky week to week, right? Because it's all about the battery you're facing. Even the most aggressive teams don't run on every battery, or at the very least, they pull way back on how much they run. So screw it. I will punt steals at the drop of a hat. I don't plan to do it, right? Because if I'm drafting in the middle and the guy I want is Ellie De La Cruz, all of a sudden I'm in the race for steals, right? And so I'm like, all right, well, I better win this category because I got a real good head start. But if I don't, I'm just like, all right, screw it. I'm gonna just hit.
Yeah, it's kind of looking at the draft board. We're kind of did the complete opposite of what Eric Samulski did at the 7 spot, where he took Ellie De La Cruz, Jackson Churio, and Bryce Turang as 3 of his 4 top picks. Like, he's gonna win stolen bases every week, which is great. But like you said, there's 9 other categories that you got to go out and win. So we'll have to wait and see if he recovers from that later in the draft or not.
And how many home runs does he got?
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's certainly not as many as we do. Living
pretty
up
sure
to the name.
Those Hacks three guys are like Ohtani and half of Cal, right? So it's like, again, those guys combined probably have a better batting average, and Manny Machado hits home runs, and I think he does a good job finding some power later. It's not elite power, but there is power he finds later. But yeah, I love starting out with all the power I need, because then I've got flexibility later to take some of those ratio guys to, hey, if I want to take a Chandler Simpson, I can take a Chandler Simpson and think, yeah, well, I'll play him when I know he's starting. I'll play him when he's up against teams that give up base runner or like give up base stealers and get all my steals that way. Right. He steals 2 or 3 bases in one day. I'm like, all right, good enough. You can win stolen bases many weeks without that many of them.
A couple of guys that I know were in our queue when we took Pete Alonso in the 3rd were Yordan Alvarez and James Wood, obviously 2 more power guys. You have James Wood on the show sheet as someone who seems very interesting to you, had a great first half, kind of fell off with the strikeouts peaking in the second half. What do you think about Wood coming into 2026?
Yeah, and actually I have Pete Alonso ranked. He ends up being ranked my 14th best hitter. He actually ends up being ranked better than Cal Raleigh by 1 spot when all the dust settled. So I guess you could have flipped these around. Eno wasn't going to take Cal. And we'll talk about catcher in a little bit. I think catcher is an incredibly interesting position with how deep it is, but also, you know, Cal Raleigh specifically, I don't expect him to repeat his 60 home runs, but the amount to which he outperformed every other catcher is really interesting. It's like the 2, 3, and 4 guys combined end up like the same value as Cal Raleigh. So yeah. So with, you know, looking at Pete Alonso, it was easy to take him. But if you think about last season, after the first half, I actually had James Wood in my top 10. And unfortunately, what happens with James Wood, and if you look at the article, I put this graph out there for you. Strikeouts are the thing you saw on the box score. You saw the strikeouts, crooked number, felt like every single game. And what happens is James Wood has never been good at hitting breaking balls. But at the start of the season, and for much of last season, he was very good at making decisions against breaking balls, right? So he was very good at knowing when not to swing against breaking balls. And when he did swing, he tended to swing at breaking balls he had a chance at. Again, he was very bad at making contact with them. But when he did offer at them, he had a shot, right? This falls off a cliff in the second half. It's steep. He goes from a like top 90th to 75th percentile decision maker against breaking balls for the first half of the year down to like a 25th percentile decision maker against breaking balls. Now, the beauty of decision making is it is purely mental. You do not have to get stronger to make good decisions, right? You don't actually have to do anything besides practice pitch recognition, right? And they have lots of ways to do this, including like between live pitching. They've got these cool like goggle things that hitters can wear and just try to like work on pitch recognition. All these things, I think, you know, he'll continue to clobber fastballs. He'll continue to, you know, do lots of things that are very good. The problem, and I mentioned this in the article, is he's going to eventually have to learn how to make those good decisions against breaking balls and hit the ones in the zone, right? He's got to at least be like not the worst in the league at hitting breaking balls in the zone. Because every pitcher at the major league level can throw breakers for strikes. They all can do it, right? And especially when you start looking at like the bullpen, they all do it a lot, right? Like it's heavy, like the league is heavy breaking balls and they throw them for strikes. So I think the league figured this out that James Wood had this weakness. He didn't have it early on, but he developed it. They attacked it hard. If he fixes it, he goes back to being, I mean, this is a top 10 caliber talent that you're going to get quite a discount on because of how ugly that second half was. Again, he can fix this. There's a lot of risk. Asking guys to get better against breaking balls is one of the hardest things you can ask them to do. And that's what we're asking James Woods to do. James Wood needs to be better at it. We hope that he can. And if he does, the payoff is enormous. And if he doesn't, he ends up, he won't earn a third round value if he doesn't fix this problem, but he will certainly be better than he was in the second half. I think ultimately if he doesn't fix it, he turns into more of like a, I'm trying to think of a good example, like a Teoscar Hernandez type, like streaky power, except he walks more, right? He takes a lot more walks, but he'll be stuck as this like low batting average, high OBP slugger who has big, ugly slumps because he's off on breaking balls. So I think that he's a really interesting gamble because you got to do it pretty early. I think it'll be at least in the third or fourth round, maybe the fifth. I'm very willing to take that gamble. Like we didn't because we had Alonso. And we don't really need to take a risk on power when we have Otani and Rayleigh already. But if, you know, I think the team that did take him this week in fantasy, I think they did a nice job because Bobby Witt is sort of a risk for power. That might only be 20 home runs again. I'm not sure he gets back to 30. Vlad Guerrero Jr. in the regular season seems to top out at around 30 and might hit less, right? I know he's having a great playoff, but that is a super flat swing that Vlad Guerrero has, right? It's really, really flat. And so it's hard to hit home runs that way. And so when he's on, he is able to hit them with some regularity, but he goes long droughts without them. He still hits 300, but he doesn't hit the home runs. So I think it was a very interesting gamble for that team to be like, we could go over the edge with power here. And we already feel amazing about our ratios with Witt and Vlad. So it's a perfect risk for them. So yeah, like these are the kinds of things that you really have to be thinking about. It's like, not only is he a risk, but what, like, is your team in a place to take that risk? And again, that's why I thought This Week in Fantasy had a great opportunity there to take him. And they did. We didn't need that, right? Especially because I ranked Alonso higher. But again, just a lot of very interesting thought processes to have at this point in the draft.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the middle rounds of this mock draft and talk more about Scott's top 200 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford here with Scott Chu talking about the Pitcherless podcast mock draft that all of our podcast teams participated in over the last course of the last couple weeks. Actually, it was a slow draft. It took a little while, but to get everybody together to do this event was really cool. And I think it provides some excellent information. We're pairing that with Scott's top 200 hitters for Fantasy Baseball 2026, an article that dropped earlier this week. Scott, we talked about our huge power start with Shohei Ohtani, Cal Raleigh, Pete Alonso, and Riley Green. In the fifth round, we took Jacob deGrom to just give us that one ace to start our staff. And then we came right back in the 6-7 turn with more power, with Josh Naylor going in the sixth round at 71st overall, the 11th pick of the sixth round. And then Austin Riley finishing off our turn, the second pick in the seventh round, 74th overall. Nobody is going to hit more home runs than this team, assuming everyone stays healthy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fact, and that makes me happy, right? It's really hard to not do well in a league when you win home runs, right? Actually the stat that's most correlated with doing well, if I recall from some research they did a while back, is runs scored. For whatever reason, runs scored had the highest correlation to like where you finished in a league. It's not like a completely direct correlation where if you win runs, you definitely win, but you win runs usually because you have a bunch of hitters that hit in the top third of a batting order on a good offense. That's how you win runs. And that means you probably got a bunch of real good hitters. So anyway, Josh Naylor is one of my favorite players. You have to understand that from the moment he joined the Seattle Mariners, Josh Naylor was tied for the lead in stolen bases on that team. Josh Naylor has second percentile sprint speed on the same team as Julio Rodriguez, if you'll recall. Josh Naylor was actually tied for the most stolen bases on that team in July. He was on that team for 5 games. Like, Josh Naylor, that dude is all hustle and effort, right? Like, he's 5'10". He is basically the same size as Willians Astudillo, if you remember him. He's roughly, if you've been watching the World Series, Josh Naylor's roughly the same size as Alejandro Kirk. Except he had 30 steals. 30. Again, stolen bases are extremely manager specific, right? There's a lot of places Josh Naylor could go that won't want him to run, right? If he ends up in Detroit, they don't really run. You end up in like the Reds. The Reds don't run nearly as much as they used to. And that's why Ellie De La Cruz's run numbers come down. It's because Tito Francona doesn't run that much, at least compared to their previous manager, right? Manager, like, steals is very manager dependent. I think Seattle would be smart to bring Naylor back. I think he was a great fit for their team. I think that he fills a position for them that they really haven't had a lot of success finding a guy for. I think that I'd love to see him steal 30 bases again, right? Like, chubby dudes can run, man. Like, it's a beautiful thing. But anyway, I love, even if Josh Naylor doesn't get to 30 bases, I think there's a lot of teams he could get back to 15 to 20, right? He's just good at it. He was not caught often at all, despite not, I mean, he's not fast. Every single one of those steals came with a dirty jersey, right? He was not getting them standing up. He wasn't sliding in easy with his feet. It was hands, belly, just grinding on dirt to get these stolen bases, but he can do it. He can do it very effectively. He's going to hit for a good average. His home run power is a little bit fluky, even though he hits the ball very hard. He doesn't always get it in the air as much as you'd like, but yeah, Josh Naylor is a great all-around hitter. I rank him, let's see, how high did he end up on this? So Josh Naylor, I ranked him 25th, actually one spot ahead of James Wood. And again, that might fall if he goes to a team that doesn't run, right? Again, Tigers are an easy example. If he landed on a team like the Tigers, his ranking would fall a bit, right? Maybe a tier. That's probably about how much that those 10 to 15 steals would be worth. But if he's on an aggressive team, 25th almost feels light.
Yeah, love that shout and loved that draft pick. I was so excited when he fell to us. Even though we already had a first baseman on our roster, I did not care. I was excited to nab Naylor in the sixth round. At the 8-9 turn, we went Nick Pivetta to shore up our pitching rotation. He just, to me, seemed like the most consistent pitcher at that that time. Ahead of Blake Snell, Spencer Strider, just the guy that I thought we could rely upon as our SP2. And then I think we might have had an oversight. We went Jacob Wilson to fill our shortstop hole. He was shortstop number 12 off the board. But one of the guys that I think we missed was Geraldo Perdomo, who went about a round and a half later in the middle of the 10th to on the wire. And he's a guy who you have ranked in your top 30 going into top 2026. Tell me why.
Because I messed up. There's a very valuable exercise here in doing a draft without projections, doing a draft without pre-ranks, right? It's really hard to understate how much the early projections like Steamer and the Bat and ATC affect ADP because most people use them, and site rankings, right? So site rankings have a huge impact on who gets taken when. So yeah, we really should have taken Perdomo there. I think Perdomo is a very interesting player because it's really hard to get a feel for where he's going to be. I'm very excited to see where Kyle Bland's projections come out on Perdomo. He hit more home runs than he had in his entire major league career before that. He like doubled the amount he ever hit in the minor leagues. I mean, this was really out of nowhere. The other thing with the Diamondbacks is like this offense is not deep, right? Unless they bring back some guys, this offense is not deep. It is Geraldo Perdomo, Ketel Marte, Corbin Carroll, and a bunch of question marks, right? We saw this at the end of last season. They weren't that good. So any downturn from Geraldo Perdomo is going to hit hard, right? Now, luckily, he should bat first. He should do it right in front of Corbin Carroll and Ketel Marte and score plenty of runs. But like the RBI totals are going to be ugly if this is how the team looks heading into next year. I don't think it necessarily will be, but there's no depth, man. The bottom of this lineup is terrible. So unless some young guys really turn it on quick and some other guys become something they've never been in the past, there are some question marks, but again, we definitely should have taken him there. I like Jacob Wilson. I think he was incredible to start the season and then faded a bit. So I think a lot of that is due to his injury and then just not playing for a while. For a rookie, that's really hard to rebound from. I think he'll be an excellent source of batting average, like an elite source of batting average. I think he'll score plenty of runs because guess what? The A's are still playing in a minor league park next year, right? The Rays aren't, but the A's are. So they have probably the best home field advantage in the American League. So that'll help a bit. The top of that offense with Nick Kurtz has gotten a lot better. We actually didn't see Wilson and Kurtz at the same time and both be good at the same time. So I'm very interested to see how that turns out. And before we get too far, I do want to take one quick step back because I forgot to mention Austin Riley and third base. So shortstop is a position where we waited and we took like the last starting shortstop. It should have been, you know, probably Perdomo, but everyone in your league will likely have a starting shortstop by like the sixth round, seventh round. We were last by quite a bit. And that's because I knew people were going to be patient at shortstop after that. Right. Cause they already had one and this league doesn't use middle infield. So I've got shortstop. Now I'm just looking at best hitters or other positions. Third base is tougher because you get a lot of question marks at third base really fast, right? Like Zach Neto is a back end starting shortstop. And I feel pretty good about him. You know what I mean? Like 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases, decent batting average. Yeah, his team stinks, but like he's good. Corey Seager, like as long as he's healthy, he should be much, much better. Bo Bichette had a rebound year. Jeremy Pena is still going to lead off for the Astros and he should be pretty good. Like those are back end shortstops, right? And that's because like the rest of the shortstop pool gets real risky, right? You get Perdomo in there. He's good. And then it's like, do you think Trevor Story can do this again? Can Jacob Wilson find what he had? Can O'Neill Cruz be anything like he was in the first half? And then there's an even deeper pit after that, right? I rank a bunch of shortstops, but there's a stark contrast between shortstop number, let's say like 10, 11, 12, and the guys that are available even just like three or four rounds later, right? Are there some stable options toward the back? Sure, right? Dansby Swanson, Willy Adames, if you think he can do another second half surge, they're there, but it's not comfortable. Third base is even worse. So with third base, we took Austin Riley, who has been very disappointing in each of the last two seasons. Injuries have shortened both of them. If he's healthy, I mean, this was a guy who was a lock for 30 home runs and hitting 280 and driving in 100. And he's been far from it the last two seasons, but that late in a draft at third base at a position where it's like, there's not a whole lot left, right? Do you think Isak Paredes can stay healthy for a full season? Do you think Eugenio Suarez can do this again? You know, can Matt, how far can Matt Shaw go hitting 85 miles an hour on average? I don't know. So if I'm going to take a gamble, why not the guy who's done it before, right? And who's on a team. So who's done it before is like Suarez, Chapman, Riley. Riley has more upside than all of them. So we take Austin Riley. You need a plan at third base coming into drafts, though, because the position thins out incredibly fast. And you don't want to be the one relying on like Royce Lewis or Jordan Westberg and just kind of seeing what happens.
Yeah, I was thrilled that we got Riley as late as we did. I thought that really I could see him being ranked up near Alex Bregman, who went two rounds prior. So thrilled to get Austin Riley in the seventh. Like we said, we went Pivetta Wilson. And then we got to a part of the draft that felt a little bit more dicey. We went Brandon Nimmo at the end of the 10th round, pick 119 overall. And then Brandon Woodruff on the end of that turn. A couple guys with some question marks, but at this point in the draft, I think that both of them are solid. And then we turn around at the end of the 12th and we grab Joe Adell, who you touched on earlier. A couple guys in this section of the draft that I think maybe if we had constructed our roster a little bit differently in the early rounds, this is kind of where that second tier of catchers behind Cal Raleigh is going. You have Ben Rice, William Contreras, Shea Langeliers, Hunter Goodman, all kind of going in this cluster ninth, 10th round. I think now would be a great time to touch on the landscape of the catcher position and kind of what you're looking for if you're not grabbing Cal Raleigh early.
There's a couple I tier, like basically if you look at these ranks, you'll find almost all the catchers are together, right? Catchers real deep, folks. So we take Raleigh early. He's going to go in the second or third round of most drafts for single catcher leagues. And then there's going to be a bit of a gap. And then you're going to see Hunter Goodman, Shea Langeliers, Wilson Contreras, a bunch of guys go. And I think coming into drafts, you need to sort of decide, right? So I'll tell you kind of how the tiers of catcher break down if I'm just looking at catcher. So number one, that's Cal Raleigh. Tier number two, that's going to be Hunter Goodman, William Contreras, Ben Rice. And then there's like a little bit of a gap. Then there's Shea Langeliers and Will Smith, a little bit of a gap. Sal Perez, Ivan Herrera, Drake Baldwin, Augustin Ramirez, bit of a gap. Alejandro Kirk, Yainer Diaz, Gabriel Moreno, you know, Francisco Alvarez, all those names I just said, I think most people in a 12 team league would not hate having as their starting catcher on draft day. There's legit 14. And if you're, you know, a rookies guy and you like a little bit of risk, Samuel Basalo is my catcher number 15, Dylan Dingler, catcher number 16, JT Realmuto, 17, Wells, 18, there's 22 catchers in my top 200, right? Like there's probably people listening to this going, oh, well, you haven't said anything about Kyle Teal. Kyle Teal makes the cut, right? 22 catchers in my top 200, which means in two catcher leagues, it's an incredibly interesting position. We're not going to talk too much about that right now, but in single catcher, I think you can either decide, right? Like I want the best catcher. Like I want a Ben Rice, William Contreras, who should be fully healthy, a Hunter Goodman, or, you know, I want one of those guys. Or you can say, I'll take the best value, right? Which generally means the last one. You just keep waiting and see if somebody slips too far. Like I think the team that got Ivan Herrera, like two rounds after Augustin Ramirez and all that, like the guy who got Will Smith, around later, than Shea Langeliers and Hunter Goodman, they all probably feel great about how this all worked out, right? Because like, oh, I just waited and I got a pretty darn good catcher with a ton of upside. Yeah, we've never had this many catchers getting this many plate appearances and doing this well with them. We've been talking about it for years. That like, oh yeah, the position is getting deeper. Like Sal Perez goes incredibly late. Drake Baldwin goes too late here. You're going to get a good catcher. The question is, do you want to lock in your catcher or do you want to take a chance at a high upside catcher late? And some of that is going to be how the draft comes to you. Some of it's going to be how you like to manage that position, right? Because streaming catchers is going to be really viable, right? So it's like, hey, you know what? I'll take a chance on Drake Baldwin, see if he brings his rookie success into year two, see what happens. I'll take a chance on, you know, like, I think Sal Perez will generally go earlier in drafts than he did in this one. But even then, it's like, yeah, I'll take another chance on Sal Perez and, you know, see how much is left in the tank. Hey, Yainer Diaz got off to a slow start last year, but he was much better after that. That's a great floor catcher, right? But it's so, I mean, it's nothing like it was even 3 or 4 years ago when being a really good catcher gave you so much more value over anyone else. That's just not the case anymore. So the biggest thing to think about though is plate appearances, right? Like if you go too long, you'll probably come up at about 40 games short of where other people are at their catchers. Like Cal Raleigh plays 150, 160 games, right? Hunter Goodman's going to play just about every day. William Contreras plays just about every day. Will Smith is a tough one because he doesn't. It gets interesting with the playing time, but there's lots of catchers, folks. So many. And understanding how you want to tackle it right off the bat is going to give you a bit of a head start. Where again, I think there's a very viable strategy to say, I'm not looking at any catchers for the first 10 rounds. Not going to do it. I think you can still end up with a very good catcher. In this draft, I think you would have gotten Sal Perez. But there's also a strategy where it's like, hey, you know what? Cal Raleigh fell to me in the second or third. And I want all those stats. The fact that he's a catcher is icing on the cake. So yeah, Ben Rice, another guy. I think if you want to target a catcher early, that's a really good name to look at. Ben Rice and Hunter Goodman. And if you can't get one of those, if we hadn't gotten one of those, we would have waited. We would have gotten the last starting catcher.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of our draft and a couple other positions of importance here after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu. We're recapping the Pitcherless Pods mock draft that we all participated in. Each podcast team took on a slot in the draft. We drafted second, loaded up on bats early on, and then got to this section of the draft where we drafted 8 consecutive pitchers. And I think that's a testament to just how much pitching is available in this portion of the draft. And I mean, it was from round, you know, 13 to round 19, we just hammered on that pitching, just taking arm after arm. And I think we have a really quality staff that we've built up, a lot of ceiling here with young guys like Hurston Waldrip and Connolly Early, as well as some decent floor with guys like Gavin Williams and Jack Flaherty. So just, Scott, a testament to how much pitching is available at this section of the draft, how deep pitching goes, and how important it is to grab those elite bats early.
Nobody during this portion of the draft took more hitters than pitchers. And that's smart. You don't want to be in that position. There's tons of them, right? Like so many guys, if things work out just a little different, this is where you found Shane McClanahan and Noah Cameron and, you know, Hunter Waldrop and Jack, you know, we took Jack Flaherty and that's where Lodolo went and Treya Savage went in this range and a bunch of closers. Like there's a lot of really, really interesting, viable pitching here, right? Nathan Eovaldi goes in this stretch. That's what I want to be looking at. I want to just get all this pitching because the hitters that go in this range are nothing like the guys that go early, right? Even if you're the biggest Colson Montgomery fan and think that he has some shot of repeating what he did over 61 games, which I don't think it's impossible. I think that it's weird to see a guy be so successful selling out for power and not really have a lot of repercussions for that. He does at the very end, the strikeout rate gets a little high. I'm interested to see how pitchers sort of adjust to that. And like, I like Taylor Ward. He's very streaky, but he's got upside. But like, these guys are not close to what you get early in the draft, right? So that's why you want to hammer those pitchers, because their upside just isn't the same, right? Ian Happ is a fine hitter. His upside is pretty limited, right? Lewis Robert Jr. has a ton of upside and the floor is abysmal, right? We've never seen Jonathan Aranda or Noel V. Marte put it together for anything close to a full season, right? These are the guys that are available at this time. And I'm out, right? I'd rather just take more pitching. So I think that works out really well for us. And then we're just like, all right, we need three more hitters. We still don't have a second. By this point, we still don't have a second baseman, not a one, right? And that's a little bit by design, just because second base is horrible. it's a very, very challenging position to get through, because it is just dying for top end talent and there just isn't much. So I do rank five second basemen in my top 51, right? Jazz Chisholm, Bryce Terang, Michael Garcia, Ketel Marte, Nico Horner. I think, you know, I got a couple comments that they felt Marte was too low. A lot of that is because I'm concerned about Arizona, but you know, we'll see how it all goes. But yeah, after those guys, like, you're already talking about risks. Jordan Westberg at 75, Jose Altuve at 76, Jackson Holliday, who I think is really interesting, who made a big step forward against breaking balls in, you know, really throughout the season. By the end of the season, he's actually one of the best decision makers, one of the best power, and one of the best contact guys against breaking balls in the league. So I think that we might, even though his actual power faded, I think that improvement against breaking balls gives hope that maybe there's that second half breakout. You know, how much do you trust Brandon Lowe, who's not on the Rays as of today, right? Probably will be by the end, but we don't know. We've got Ozzie Albies, who's mostly been terrible, right? He was the 34th best second baseman in the first half. And then all of a sudden turned on the second half. Do you believe in that? Right. It gets real ugly real fast. So we took Bryson Stott, who I rank as my 16th second baseman. Luke Keyshaw's in that range. Gleyber Torres. The ceiling on second baseman is so low that I'm very willing, especially if I'm not in a good spot to grab like a Michael Garcia or a Bryce Terang or a Ketel Marte or something like that. I'm just going to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait until one of these guys slips way too far. I think I would have liked Jackson Holliday. He just went a little bit earlier than I was ready to take him. We took Joe Adell. I may have rather had Jackson Holliday in that spot. Oh, it went the other way. So we didn't have, so Jackson Holliday gets taken in that round. So it's like, that would have been nice to get Jackson Holliday. But because we didn't, it was like, all right, let's go get a bunch of pitchers and I'll wait. I'll wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And I'll take Bryson Stott. Right. Which is fine. Right. And if you don't get Bryson Stott, you might get Luke Keyshaw. You might get Gleyber Torres. You might take a chance on a Caleb Durbin. I think a guy who, I don't remember if he gets drafted here, but a guy who's very interesting if the Yankees don't change much, you know, if they don't sign someone, Jose Caballero, right? I think he's a guy who, if you need steals, it'll be late. He's probably going to be a starter for them. Why not take a chance, right? Hey, maybe Colt Keith has a good spring, right? They're still named, like, Brendan Donovan is not a terrible player. And he can be useful in stretches. Like, you're probably going to end up streaming second base if you don't get one of these early guys, or you keep waiting and see if, you know, like a Kevin McGonigal as a prospect makes the team, right? He'll shoot up boards and is eligible at second base. So if you miss the early ones, just wait, man, just wait on second base.
Yeah. And even a guy like I'm looking for, Otto Lopez in this draft board, and I'm just not seeing him. Maybe it's because he's not labeled as a second baseman, but I think Otto Lopez might have gone undrafted, and he's another name in that middle range that I'd be very interested in as well.
Yeah. By the time I was done with these ranks, I had Otto Lopez ahead of Stott. I mean, we're talking by like 11 spots, which at this point in the draft is sort of nothing, but Stott steals more bases. And I was like, well, if he does kind of break through, hey, maybe he gives us a boost there that makes us competitive some weeks in that. But yeah, Otto Lopez wasn't drafted. He'd be someone potentially interesting. Hey, if Brett Batty wins a full-time job, he's going to be kind of interesting. Lenin Sosa was solid all year. He wasn't great, but he's got 20 home run pop. And I mean, who else are the White Sox going to play? Right? They don't really have another option. So yeah, there's options. Like, they're not exciting. The upside is nothing. Again, nothing like what we see in the other positions, right? So I know I say have a plan for this position, have a plan for that position. At second base, I just would say have a few targets. Have like three layers of targets, right? Like for me, I probably wasn't really that interested in Jazz or Terang based on the build we had. So I was like, well, I won't take them. Let's see if Mikel Garcia or Ketel Marte slip a bit. They didn't. I'm not going to chase Nico Horner. I don't really need like Westbrook, Altuve. We'll see if we can get to Holiday. Holiday didn't work out. So then I was like, all right, we're just waiting and waiting and waiting. We're going to wait. We're going to take it all the way through. And that strategy at second base, I think, will serve you very well. Is just have layers where, and it's okay to skip layers. You can be like, you know what? I want to shore up every other position, and I'm looking at the second base pool and seeing the guys that are outside the top 100 at second base. Sadane Rafaela and Otto Lopez and, you know, Jorge Polanco and Bryson Stott and Luke Keyshaw and Gleyber Torres. And I might say, you know what? I'm going to skip all the top second basemen and focus on other positions. And I'm happy with one of those guys, right? Maybe two of them even. Who cares?
Yeah, and I think in single catcher leagues, outside of maybe catcher, second base is going to be the least drafted position, certainly. And so I think that lends itself to the point you made earlier about streaming that position and being able to pick up Otto Lopez off the waiver wire and to pick up Jose Caballero potentially. So I think that's a great shout there. And you know, waiting on second base certainly worked for us in this draft, and hopefully be, you know, proves to be a viable strategy as the offseason continues.
I love Gleyber Torres, but I think, you know, when they saw Gleyber Torres where they took him and then how much longer they could have waited to get Polanco or Stott, it's like, maybe I should have, you know?
And same thing about, for me, at least, Luke Keyshaw. Like, I love the idea of what Luke Keyshaw could provide over 160 games if he stays healthy. But I think the 12th round where he went is just too early.
Your brain remembers how great he was at the start of the season and how great he was when he first came back. It doesn't remember that he really fades after that. So, you know, Luke Keyshaw does not perform consistently at all to end the season. And it's as pitchers get more looks at him, right? So he ranks a bit lower. He, you know, like over the last, you know, sort of chunk of this, his final 37 games, it's an 85.1 mile per hour average exit velocity and a 3.4% barrel rate, right? The power's just not there. All that power happens like right away and then it just fades completely. So could he rebound from that? Absolutely. He's got a whole offseason with the major league coaches to figure this out. But it's a lot more risk than it feels like. It is an upside play, but what that upside is probably not what you saw in those small samples. It's probably like, you know, a hedge between that, where I think like his upside is like a solid second baseman as opposed to a top five second baseman. Although again, the top five at second base isn't that hard to break into.
And his floor is losing playing time to Edward Julian.
Not Edward Julian, but His floor from a fantasy perspective is streaming second base.
Fair enough.
Which is fine. You'll be fine.
We'll talk about our last two hitter picks of the draft. Just a couple of bats that seemed really interesting at this point in the draft, kind of lottery ticket type of guys. And both of them, at least at the end of 2025, were New York Yankees outfielders. Dominguez will certainly be back for the Yankees next year, but Trent Grisham, not sure where he's going to end up. Talk to me about Dominguez and Grisham and why those were names that popped off the sheet to you.
So these are two guys that are, their value is very likely to change as the offseason goes on. But as of today, Jason Dominguez is probably the best leadoff hitter that the Yankees have that they would actually use in that spot. Leading off for the Yankees is a very valuable place to be. That is where Trent Grisham made all his money, right? Trent Grisham just is coming off a 30 home run season. He's got decent power. He can play the field still a little bit. He's not very good at it like he used to be, but he can still do it. He's going to be a valuable free agent commodity. He's going to land somewhere. He's going to bat in the middle of a lineup somewhere. It's probably not going to be quite as sweet as hitting leadoff for the Yankees, but he's also not likely to get platooned elsewhere. Whoever's going to give him that contract is likely going to make him play every day to earn that money, because he was not making a ton with the Yankees. So they were fine platooning him, and they never really felt great about their leadoff situation all season. Jason Dominguez, though, he's a switch hitter. He's got the speed. He could break out. And again, this is outfield, right? If it doesn't work out, move on to the next lottery ticket. I think if Jason Dominguez goes into camp and through, a lot of spring training games, looks like the leadoff hitter, he's going to be drafted much higher. Leading off, again, hitting in front of Aaron Judge and Ben Rice, and when healthy, Giancarlo Stanton and Jazz Chisholm Jr. will get you to score a lot of runs. And it's a friendly park to hit in. So I think he could be a very exciting player, assuming he keeps that role. And then with Trent Grisham, it matters a lot where he goes, but he should be hitting in the middle of a lineup somewhere. And again, I think it's something that if you weren't following Trent Grisham as much last year, you might remember these like long spells where he loses playing time and wasn't always so good. But yeah, he ends up hitting 30. I mean, he hit 34 home runs last season. So if I can use one of my last picks to get a guy coming off a 34 home run season, like, yeah, sure, it came with a .235 batting average, but who cares? He gets on base plenty, right? A .348 OBP. Again, it's the best season of his career by far, right? It is twice as many home runs as he had ever hit in a full season. So I'm not sure I necessarily expect him to do it again, but he did do it. And why not take a flyer to see if he can do, 30 home runs again and be a decent back end outfielder for you? He certainly was worth that last season, finishing as the 30th outfielder, which is also the 77th batter, because outfield is ridiculously deep.
Now, looking through at the other teams of this section of the draft, are there any bats that you saw go off the board that you're like, okay, yeah, I understand that pick, or that's another a bat that might interest you, maybe later on this draft season?
Yeah, so we mentioned Caballero. He was, he's taken in the second to last round. I mean, if you forget to get a shortstop, Dansby Swanson is there at the end. And he's not exciting, but you know exactly what he is, and it's not the worst floor in the world, right? I think he's an interesting pick at the end if you just haven't gotten one. We're going to be hearing a lot about Tristan Cassis. This is a one-time, like, top five hitting prospect in baseball to a guy who, like, his team won't necessarily say he's the first baseman going into next year, despite there being no real competition on the roster, right? Even if you're the biggest like Romy Gonzalez fan, like you think it's going to be Cassis if he can stay healthy, which he has yet to do. Samuel Basalo is DH only in some formats, depending. I think I have to double check, but no, he's probably got the most power coming out of the minors, him and Bryce Eldridge, who went around before. There's a ton of power there. They're interesting guys in the back if you did not get enough power early. And then I think the pick that I don't know if I had the guts to do would be Jordan Lawler, because man, he didn't look good last year, but I know there's a talented player there because too many smart people tell me he's very good. We just haven't seen it in the major leagues, and I'm not sure he has a position. But, you know, again, if he wins one, he could be really interesting. Oh, and then Christian Walker was taken at the very end. He was a lot better in the second half than he was in the first. That it's a pretty good value there. I actually rank him inside the top 100 hitters. You know, the power really shows up in the second half. So that was good, but he is going to be 35. The walk rates come down. It's a decent, I don't remember if the, yeah. So their other first baseman is Jonathan Aranda. And I really like that kind of combo, right? Like if I'm going to take a risky first baseman, I might as well go grab another one for the back end of my bench. I only need one of them to hit. Right. And I didn't pay very much for either one. So like we took Bryson Stott. Part of me wonders if instead of drafting the homer, picking Casey Mize at the very end, I went and should have double tapped second base to be like, I just need one of these guys to work out. I need one of them to start hot, right? Or maybe a third baseman in case something happens to Austin Riley and I want to, you know, try to back up and say like, well, I'll take a lotto ticket and see what happens. But you know, there's not a ton of that at third base. Like there's not a lot of lotto tickets towards the end of the draft. Just a lot of boring. Maybe like a Sal Stewart would be interesting. He was incredible in the minor leagues. Had, you know, hit 5 home runs his first 18 major league games. I think he should be the DH for the Reds, at least going into camp, unless they sign someone like Austin Hayes again, which they really don't have any need to do, but they might. So Sal Stewart might have been an interesting pick in the reserve round there, but or unless someone took him earlier, but he's a guy that should be available around that time. It's an interesting play. So yeah, I think there are some interesting names there, but again, these are lotto tickets. These are guys that I want starting the season on my bench. There are not a ton of starters available at the end, except for like in leagues like Yahoo formats where you don't have a middle infield, you don't have a quarter infield. You might be able to find a shortstop that could be a starter, not a good one, but a starter like Dansby Swanson.
Well, is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you wanted to address before we close out for the episode?
You know, I would say I was stunned at how deep first base looks. I talked about shortstop a lot. The number of guys who are eligible at first base that I ranked in the top, I ranked 20 first basemen in the top 100, right? Like, and it's a legit 20, right? Like sure. Like two of them are catchers, but the rest are first basemen, right? There's a lot, especially at the top. Like I got a bunch, I've got 10 of them in the top 50 with Freddie Freeman being hitter number 50. Michael Bush is right after him at 52. Vinny P, 58. First base is crazy deep. And we sort of felt this happen early last season. That trend has continued. A lot of those guys stayed relevant. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that while shortstop is often talked about as the deepest position, I would argue that first base is equally deep.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for taking the time not only to talk with me on the podcast, but to help me through this draft. It was a lot of fun. Not only, you know, talking shop with you and all the rest of the podcast teams, but to put together this team, I feel really good about the way it turned out. And if you look at our roster, there is not a hitting core that is better than what Hacks and Jacks put together, in my opinion.
It was a lot of fun to kind of go through some of these motions. And again, probably the most interesting bit is that none of us have any idea how anyone is ranking anything, right? That's a very different environment. So if you are an early drafter, that is the advantage you get in early drafts is you're not all using the same stuff. In fact, none of you are really using the same stuff, right? Whereas the later you draft, the more information is out there, the more likely everyone is looking at a lot of the same things you do. So it's fun to do this now. It's also fun to like watch a strategy take shape, right? So yeah, and you know, I think it's an exercise where I'm not necessarily saying everyone should go and try to do rankings at this point in the season. You'll drive yourself nuts. I did. It's really, really difficult to do it without projections and all that, but it's at least valuable to look at some of that stuff. And if you feel like, if you read the top 200 and you think, oh, hey, this doesn't make any sense. You're way too low on this guy. Number one, you might be right. You know what I mean? Like, not working on a lot of baseline here. I'm doing the Nick thing. I'm kind of just going by, my evaluation of these players, how they finished the last few years, what kind of upsides they have, things like that. But it's a good exercise to see, how do I feel about players before projections start telling me how to feel? And if you don't think projections change how you feel, you're probably not understanding just how much they change everything. Every ranking you see, pretty much, I mean, maybe not Knicks as much, but they start with projections. The vast majority of hitter rankings start with projections. And so thinking about these players before those come out, and maybe even doing an early draft, just to kind of see how it plays out. That's where you can get some of the best values and also some of like the worst picks. like, you'll look back at it even before the season starts and be like, man, that was a bad risk.
I certainly would rather do that in October, November than in March, April. But Scott, it's been quite a blast talking about this. Remind the people where to find you and your work.
Yeah. So obviously you can find my top 200, a top 300 will come out in February, early February, around the Super Bowl is when we release like the big ranks for the coming season. So I'll be getting some help from Nate Schwartz, who does the AMAs with me, to write out some of that stuff, but I'll be doing the ranks. That'll be on February. You can find this one over at pitcherlist.com. You can also find me on Blue Sky, Scott Chu at pitcherlist.com or .pitcherlist.com. I forget exactly how the format goes. And you can find me on Twitter at if the Chu fits, if the CHU fits. If no other reason to read the top 200, it's that I give a blurb to every single player in that top 200. And most rankings don't do that. So I give you very specific reasons you can disagree with me and throw them back in my face. And I enjoy putting myself out there like that. So if nothing else, check it out. Even if you just want to say, like, what does he think about this player? I'm not telling you should agree with me, but I did try to provide an opinion on every single player that is ranked, and I'll do it again when the 300 come out.
Beautiful. And as a reminder, you can find me, Brett Ford, at Fade That Man on social media. I'm very active in the Pitcher List Discord. This time of year, I'm working with QBList.com, Pitcher List fantasy football sister site. So check me out over there. Every Monday morning on the fantasy football subreddit, we post the What We Saw column. It's an aggregate of all the analysts that watch football games for us and just kind of take the stuff that's not in the box score and put it on paper so that you can make actionable insights for your next fantasy lineup. So make sure to check out QBList.com if you haven't, if you're interested in fantasy football. And of course, we'll be back at some point during the offseason with more Hacks and Jacks.
Eventually.
I'm looking forward to it, man. It's about this time. I think we talked about this off the pod. It's about this time of year where I start to get the itch for fantasy baseball again. It's been about a month removed from it. And, August, September sometimes can be a drag, especially if your teams aren't doing great, which seems to be the case for most of my roto leagues. But then October, November rolls around and you're like, man, I could really go for a fantasy baseball draft right about now.
Yeah. And this is about the time my fantasy football teams are being eliminated from contention. So it all works out really well.
The timing of things works out. That's right. Well, for Scott, I'm Brett. Thanks for tuning into Hacks and Jacks. We'll see you next time. See you later.